Blog Talk Radio. This episode of Kimberly's Intentional Moment is brought to you by the Seika Network on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning. And again, the line from The Truman Show is perfect here. For those of you around the world, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. I want to start the show by saying I had so much fun last week having my teacher on the show and us talking about what yoga really is and the Yoga Sutra and the difference between asana, hatha yoga, and yoga in general. Very informative. One of the things that I got the most from being with my teacher over those couple of days was going fast by going slow. So today, I'm going to do just that. I'll pause a little more. I'm going to slow it down. And I do want your feedback, because remember, as I said in the first show, this is the first time I've been on the radio. So my fourth show now, today, and I'm still learning. I feel like I've learned a lot, and I really appreciate the feedback that I've had from everybody. A lot of it has been very constructive, some of it funny. And I continue to want to encourage that behavior. Bring it on. Let's talk about it. Okay. I want to take a moment and, again, talk about how fortunate I feel to be on the radio and able to discuss some of the things that I have in store for us. And Restita, or Sifu Restita de Jesus, is somebody that I have known for 20 years almost. Sorry, Rusty, I guess I just aged us a little. But I've known her a long time, and she's always been a martial artist and is now a master martial artist, along with Robert Deal. And their show is on Monday nights at 6 o'clock. I highly encourage you to listen to it. First of all, they're both incredibly fun and funny. You will probably laugh out loud. I know they do. And they're also they're children of light. They want to be motivational and encourage others to be peaceful in the universe and in our own cultures. And so I respect both of them highly, and their show is just so different than mine. You might really, really enjoy that difference. So tune in, again, Sunday, 6 p.m. And again, thank you, Robert Deal and Restita de Jesus. For just a moment, before we begin the show, I'd like for us to sit and calm ourselves. So just take a moment to wherever you are, to just feel where you are. So you might be seated, feel your sit bones. You might be standing, feel your feet. If you're driving, feel your hands on the wheel and look out the window. Pay attention. And breathe. Take a couple of those deep breaths that we learned in the first two shows. Breathing in through your nose, into your lungs, release your abs, fill your pelvis, or breathe as if you're filling your pelvis. Exhale, gently tighten your abdominal muscles towards your spine, and feel that support going out your lungs and out your nose. Abs stay taut as you begin your inhale. Once again, fill from collarbone all the way to pubic bone, exhaling, gently tightening your abdominal muscles towards your spine. I want you to just notice your breathing. Notice your mind. Maybe your mind's like, wow, we're still noticing our breathing, and this is not so much fun. Or perhaps it's this doesn't feel very good, or I feel a little bit silly. Or maybe you just feel very grounded and good, centered. This is part of go fast by going slow. Taking a moment to breathe before you act, before you do something. Asking yourself, what am I doing? So when I defined the show or explained the show, I said that we would explore learning and growing. And those two things are very vulnerable. We've talked about learning as being vulnerable, growing being a part of that, and loving being vulnerable. And I asked that we do that anyway, even though it can be scary, even though it can feel as though you're not in control, and you really aren't, other than in your reaction. And before you act, breathe. Most things that we do don't require a fight or flight response. We live that way, particularly in America. I can speak for that. We operate in a place of fight or flight and deplete our adrenals simply because we're still living in kind of a reptilian mind, a survival mode. If you really stop and take a deep breath, you will notice, if not know, that usually isn't the case. Most of what we think we need to make a decision on right this second is not something we need to do right this second. We could take 30 seconds, probably even 30 minutes, in some cases even 30 hours or days before we make a decision, before we act. Understand by you sitting and taking a moment to decide whether now is the time to respond or react. I prefer you respond it, but either way, you give yourself that moment to notice whether it is actually fight or flight. Is someone actually going to die if I don't make this decision right now? When we talk about learning and growing, when we talk about loving and being vulnerable, some great names come to mind for me, like Mother Teresa, Jesus, or the man we call Jesus, the Dalai Lama. These are folks that I often have seen or have heard about choosing to be in a loving space, even if it didn't look flashy or fun or feel as though they were in control. Again, some of them, like especially when it comes to Jesus, we're talking about, you know, listening to stories I didn't actually hear from the man himself. And those stories are freeing for me. I can allow myself to take just a moment and, wow, what would it be like to just love anyway? And so what if it looks a certain way to certain folks? What matters is staying in the place of love, to stay in the place of peace. When it frees you, it frees everyone else. This show is intended to awaken us, or as one of my teachers has done to me in the past, he gave me a Zen hit, is what I call, or a slap that just kind of reminds you, stay right here. What is real? What's actually happening? So you've heard, I'm sure, the saying, most people see reality as they are, not as it is, or some version of that. I'm asking you, or I'm calling you to action, or better, introspection. And give yourself a daily dose of the Zen hit. What am I doing? Where am I making my decisions from? Am I making them from fear? Am I making them from love? Often when we make choices from fear, we're sitting in that, again, what I said earlier, reptilian mind where it's about survival. And most of us, I'm not saying all of us, most of us are actually not in survival mode. we're going to live to see another day unless there's a tragic accident. We're not worried about where our meal is going to come from because we have something to eat. Is it our favorite thing to eat? Maybe not. We have something to eat. We're not actually fighting an intruder in our homes. That can happen. It's unlikely that it'll happen often. Love is a place where we're expanding. Or when we make decisions from love, we're expanding. And actually, it's easier in the end. It's more relaxed to be in a space of love. Because in a space of love, we let go. That doesn't mean that we aren't mindful. That doesn't mean that we don't care. It means that we're sitting in the place of what is the bigger global, or even better yet, universal picture of this. Not just what I'm feeling in this moment, myself, my own ego, Kimberly, but how does this affect everybody else, everyone else, everything else? And I feel like we may need to have each other give each other a Zen hit now and again. So I'm going to call you to that action, that when you're seeing someone you love acting out of a space of fear when you know they don't actually need to be there, that you hold that mirror up to them and ask them to see a larger picture, like I said, more universal picture of what it is they're doing. I want to talk about intention and integrity today. So when we're learning and teaching, because we're all teachers and we're all students, when we're learning and teaching, we need to come from a place of what is my intention here? What do I want the outcome to be? And I'm hoping that simply because you're listening to the show, I mean, the show is called Kimberly's Intentional Moment. Intentional moment means something to most people, usually a beneficial or positive message. I guess I can't speak for everybody. But generally, if you're listening to the show, it's because you have decided this is a practice I'm interested in. So there's some things that we can use, some principles, some practices that we can use. And I'm pulling from the Yoga Sutra, something that I study, something that I think is valuable, something that I think can support any practice, no matter what religious or spiritual practice you have, or intentional practice you have, the yoga principles work. I mean, they're 5,000 plus years old. I think that staying power has been shown. The first one that I want to bring to our attention this morning is Maitri, which is friendliness, or better, amity. And what I decided to do, I have a definition that I talked to my teacher last night. We were talking to each other, and we kind of were batting back and forth the idea of Maitri. And he said something to the effect of friendliness, or a quality of friendliness, in the sense of connectivity, understanding that all beings, all things are connected. I'm going to come back to that in just a second. I decided just for fun, I would look up in the dictionary what amity means. And I looked up in the Merriam-Webster, and I'm looking at it right now, an era of international amity. That was an example. The definition, friendly relations between nations. I thought that was a nice, or actually applicable to what this show is about, a feeling of friendship. The synonyms are also interesting. Goodwill, friendliness, benevolence, kindliness, in German, Gemütlichkeit. The antonyms, which I also think are important when we're thinking about, because we think in opposites often, And in American culture, we would certainly like for it to be all or nothing. Maybe that just may be human culture. We want it to be black or white, all or nothing, because that certainly makes it easier. If I can just say that, you know, this is always this way or it's always that way, how easy would that be? It actually might be easier in a moment. It's dangerous. So coming back to the antonyms, ill will and venom. I find that fascinating. So venom. Because the next word in the sutra that I want to introduce to some of you, it's, you know, old news, except for it's something we cannot stop studying. Because, we could study ahimsa, or without harm, for our entire lifetime and beyond, and still not, quote-unquote, master it. Without harm would be the opposite also of venom or ill will. And so when we talk about, let's go back to friendliness. If we come from a place of friendliness, when we are discussing especially difficult things with a spouse, with a loved one, with our children, with our friends, if we come first from the place of I'm friendly, the outcome here, my intention of the outcome here is for us to both be in a higher place, which, you know, little segue here, my other teacher, Ajay, years ago, said something to the effect of compassion lifts and pity doesn't. So if we talk about compassion lifting and we talk about friendliness, so if we come from the place of I want everyone to be in a more beneficial space when I'm finished with this conversation, when I'm finished with this action, what is it that I'm going to do? How is it that I'm going to react? When you're friendly, it's pretty difficult for the person on the other end to not want to engage in that. Our hearts want that. Our hearts want love. Our hearts want acceptance. Our hearts want friends. When we come from the place of, I am befriending you, whether it's actually going to be a friendship or it's just going to be human to human, I want us to be better together, it immediately disarms a situation, whatever it is. I have you, I'm holding you, I want you to do well. When we come from that space, even when it's with somebody that is difficult for us, how can the outcome be poor? It may not be the exact outcome we're looking for. Hey, you know, that's just our idea of what we think should happen. That may or may not be what should happen. It still will be in a space of loveliness, caring, and more importantly, compassion. So amity or maitri or friendliness. Now I said I'd come back to connectivity. So many spiritual practices, even religions, or intentional practices, yoga, have been saying for, you know, centuries that we're all connected. That what you do, what you think, even with your mouth shut, matters. That it sends an energy out, that all energy is connected. We now know through physics that this is true. So I'm not even going to bother to argue that. I'm not saying that we can't have arguments or disagreements here, and we can certainly have a show on just that if somebody would like to do that. For now, I'm going with that just being the constant, that this is the truth. The truth is we're all connected. So what we do matters. What we say matters. What we think matters. Are we coming from a friendly place? Are we coming from a place of compassion? What do we want the outcome to be? So going back to whether or not you're operating from a place of friendliness or not, I say, stop. I say this to my daughter a lot. My daughter's almost 8. Just stop, especially when she's, you know, kind of freaking out in her mind about something, whatever it is. And quite frankly, I speak often to the children the same way that I speak to my adults, because we all have that childlike mind that we go back to, especially when we're in fight or flight mode. But with my daughter, I often say to her, stop, just stop. Take a deep breath. Now, what is it you're trying to say? What is it that's bothering you? What is it you're afraid of? Fear motivates a lot of anger because it's under the umbrella of fear. So asking that question, when you stop, I'm angry, I'm really angry, you stop, you take a deep breath. I'm not saying your anger will be gone. At least you're taking a moment, though, to figure out, what is it that I fear? What is it that I'm angry about? Is it actually relevant? Is it just me wanting some control? That's okay. I want it too. We all want control. But the fact is that you really only have control over your reaction. You can't control how the earth spins. You can't control someone else. But what you can do is control your reaction, or better, sit for a moment and actually respond. Take a moment. What do I want to respond with? So ahimsa, let's come back to without harm. We're operating from this place of friendliness or amity. And we're choosing to make decisions and connect with people in a way that does no harm. When we're doing that, we're going to be asking ourselves that question all the time. What am I doing? And better yet, why am I doing it? What's the motivation behind this? Another principle is called satya, which is truthfulness, and in the Yoga Sutra. And I think it's important to mention this with amity and without harm, because we need to be true to ourselves and true to others and speak and do what is true in order for the other two to really come through. If I'm lying all the time and nobody can trust what I'm saying or trust my intention, better yet, how will I ever be able to convey peace, love, and friendliness? Because no one's listening anymore. I know that I don't want harm to be done to me, so part of my wall that could go up with someone when they're untrustworthy is, I don't know where this is coming from. And if I don't know that it's coming from a place of trust and love, I may not want to listen. I talk to my kids a lot when I'm teaching in elementary schools about the difference, and I may have mentioned this in another show, and it certainly can be repeated over and over again. I know I need to hear it. What's the difference between hearing and listening? Well, hearing, you know, I think of the teacher on Charlie Brown or the Snoopy comics, but wah, 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 wah. You know, that's, I can hear that, but I'm not listening to what the teacher's saying. I'm just hearing this. Wah, wah, wah. I'm going to ask that we actually listen. So my kids actually came up with a nice definition that hearing is using our ears. Listening is paying attention while using our ears. I'm going to say that again. Paying attention while we use our ears. If I'm really listening to someone, I can, from a friendly place, do no harm by understanding what it is that they need, or what it is that, and it may just be that they need someone to hear them. We all want to be heard. Which brings me back to, we talked with Salvatore about, and I mentioned in the second show, disagreements, and even in the first show, disagreements or arguments, or what do we do when someone disagrees with us, or what do we do when we're being questioned, whether professionally or personally, by somebody. And Salvatore, this isn't a direct quote, but something to the effect of, I say thank you. You know, there's something we can learn from anyone who's giving us feedback or arguing with us or even disagreeing with us if we choose to be in the space of thank you. There's a message here. Somehow there's a message here, even though it might look funny or fuzzy on the top. If you go deeper, and it might just be how you deal with conflict. You know, thank you. You've given me the opportunity to be in a place of conflict or what feels like conflict to me, and it gives me, again, the opportunity to respond, learn, grow in my reaction to that. So, my teacher and I talked last night, as I said earlier. One of the things we talked about was arguing to learn versus arguing to win. I said in the first show that I welcome discussion, and I even welcome disagreement when we're in the space of arguing to learn. I do not want this show, or really even in my own life, to argue just to win. So it's a good question to ask yourself when you're getting ready to argue. Am I arguing to learn, or am I arguing to win? Salvatore talked about the rabbis that were arguing back and forth, and how in the end, everyone was heard and understood. And when we argue to learn, that is the outcome. When we argue to win, all kinds of things can happen. And I think that, you know, part of being in the technological world, or part of us having so much access to the internet, or so it's so easy for us to comment in forums or in social media in ways that maybe we wouldn't if we were looking that person in the eyes. We have to really question, why are we arguing? How am I contributing? Is how I'm contributing really the message I want to send, or the being or the energy I want to put into the universe? So I'm going to let you think on that for just a moment while I play the Tai Chi Symposium announcement that's coming up in July. I highly recommend. I think we are going to try to go. My teacher and I have been talking about it. So listen up, and when we come back, we'll continue to talk about this and go even into empathy.
Hi, I'm Restita De Jesus.
And I'm Robert Deal.
We're the founders of the Seika Network on blogtalkradio.com.
And we've got some great events that we'd like to share with you.
On July 6th through the 11th, 2014, the International Tai Chi Chuan Symposium will present an exciting event where five Tai Chi Grandmasters, each representing the traditional Chen, Yang, Wu Hao, Wu, and Sun styles of Tai Chi, will share their knowledge and skills. Tai Chi practitioners from all levels, including beginners, will benefit from this opportunity to learn and practice directly with the Grandmasters. The five masters that will be teaching at this event are Chen Zhen Lei, Yang Jun, Zhang Zhen Chan, Ma Hai Long, and Sun Yong Tian. You don't even have to be an experienced Tai Chi practitioner to attend. Whether you're a health promotion planner, healthcare provider, personal trainer, martial artist, physical education instructor, or school administrator, all are welcome to attend. Don't miss this opportunity to train directly under the masters. For more information to register for Directly from the Source, just go to www.taichisymposium.com, or you can email info@taichisymposium.com.
Wow, that does sound very interesting. And to be studying with such masters, wow, the things that could be learned. So please feel free to check in. And if you have any further questions, you can certainly email me too at kimtalkradio@gmail.com. Again, kimtalkradio@gmail.com. That's also with your feedback. I know in this particular show, I may be pressing some buttons. I may be hitting some nerves. And I hope I am, to be honest. I know I'm doing it in my own way, in my own mind. Checking in with ourselves isn't easy, especially when we feel like our lives are so out of our control, when we feel like, you know, bills and kids and school and jobs and relationships, it can get overwhelming. And again, I'm going to come back to, so stop. Take a deep breath. Most of the stuff that we worry about, most of the stuff that is overwhelming to us, isn't when we just take a moment, when we realize that these are not life or death decisions. Most of the time, I understand there's times where that happens and we do need to act. As I said in the first show, fear, when it comes to a primal, true primal fear, you know, you're being followed in an alley, you hear footsteps behind you, run. I'm talking about false evidence appearance real, that acronym of fear, what we make up, what we think we should be fearing. That's a very different space to operate from. And I'm asking you to choose love instead. So one of the things I thought would make a lot of sense here is talking about empathy. The difference between empathy and sympathy. Sympathy is important, but empathy is, in my opinion, a little more detached. Sympathy, for myself, I can get really wrapped up into someone. Somebody has someone in their life that dies. A friend of mine just lost someone recently. I just lost someone recently. When you're in that sympathetic place, and there's nothing wrong with that, I find that I get a little too wrapped up. I'm not thinking as clearly. I'm feeling, but I'm not thinking as clearly. Empathy takes thought. And what's interesting, when I became a parent, and I'm sure you parents out there can relate, when I became a parent, of course, the first thing that you are concerned about is my baby okay? Is, you know, does her brain work? Does her heart work? Are there any problems? Does she have all her fingers and toes? You know, and as they meet their milestones, you know, whether it's sitting up or crawling, rolling over, walking, you know, making sure that your kid is moving along as they should be, those were all big concerns to me. And with the hormones raging and the lack of sleep, that made that even more challenging. The biggest thing or the biggest concept that I want to know, or principle, or I guess it's a concept that I wanted to know my child had as soon as possible, was empathy. I wanted to help contribute to the world by my child being an extension of that love or that peace. And without empathy, those two things are harder to come by. In fact, for me, lack of empathy can be as scary as sociopaths and psychopaths. So I didn't want my child to be a psychopath or a sociopath. And it was important to me to pay attention to how she was reacting and responding in her environment, particularly with other kids, to make sure that she understood other people had feelings, and that even if she didn't understand them completely as her own, because of course they aren't her own, that she understood that this person or this child is having a feeling. And her and I've had many conversations about, you know, when she says something to someone or acts a certain way towards someone, and they may take that in a way she didn't intend, that it's still important to apologize that the person couldn't hear her or didn't understand what she was saying, and then explain where she's really coming from. And again, it's coming back to, we want to learn, not win. So she could stay in the place of, that's not what I meant. You know, you heard me wrong. Okay, well, that may be true. Bigger picture, please. So when they heard you wrong, this is how they felt. What can we do? What can you do to alleviate, if not outright eliminate, that feeling and bring it back to a positive or beneficial place, a place of love? I remember a line from Jurassic Park, and this is not a direct quote, and I haven't been able to watch the movie to find out what it actually is, but I know it was Jeff Goldblum, and he was talking to the guy that basically created all the dinosaurs, or brought them all back. And he said, you know, you realized that you could, but you didn't think about whether you should. Because I don't know about you folks, but that movie to me was the worst nightmare ever. I mean, having a T-Rex roaming about is almost unfathomable to me and so scary that there are no words. The scene where they're in the kitchen and the velociraptor comes in and the kids are hiding and they're shaking. I remember shaking with them, almost ready to cry. Like, that is so scary, because that shouldn't be living with human beings. A velociraptor shouldn't be roaming around where I'm roaming around. So come back to, you figure out that you should or you could, but should you? In talking to Salvatore last night, one of the things we talked about and that he shared with me is the ability to do something is intelligence. Deciding whether you should is wisdom. The ability to do something is intelligence. Deciding whether you should is wisdom. So sitting in the space of, I can do something, now I need to decide whether I should do this. How does this contribute? We come back to, how am I contributing? What am I doing, and why am I doing it? So many people that I've been talking to over the last few weeks, their hearts are hurting because they feel as though we've lost the mindfulness in our connectedness, realizing that everything we do affects everyone else, including ambivalence, apathy. Those affect all of us as well. When we go back to the internet, you know, using social media as a place for your agenda is one thing. How you do that is another. When you are writing something in social media or on a blog or however you're writing it, but in a space where you do not have to confront a person face-to-face, look them in the eye, could you? Could you look someone in the eye and say what you wrote? Would you have the courage to do that? Now, courage, remember, we're walking through our fear in love. Courage doesn't have anything to do with being able to beat someone down. It has to do with walking through fear with heart or with love. Would you have courage in that moment? Would you be a coward and not do it? You couldn't do it. And maybe it's not being a coward. Maybe it's making a better decision. By asking yourself, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? Or how am I contributing? Gives us the space of responsibility and accountability. Two things I think are part of the problem today. We need to be responsible for what we do and accountable for what we do. Everything we do. You're fallible. I'm fallible. We can say I'm sorry, as long as I'm sorry means something. Going back to the kids, like I said, I talk to kids and adults similarly. I mean, I might use a little bit different verbiage for each, but I talk similarly. Is what I'm doing hurtful? Or is what I'm doing helpful? Being responsible and accountable for your actions means you have to stop and think about what you're doing and why you're doing it. I realize that I'm repeating myself over and over again. There's only so many ways we can say these things in English. So when you're sitting behind your computer and you're amped up about something, and I understand that feeling, what is it that you would say if you were coming from a centered place? With the kids, again, going back to that, I talk about why are you saying something? What is your intention behind that? And oftentimes, they really do come from the space of, you know, I just want to have a good time, have fun, and, you know, play. Okay, let's include everyone in that. When we include everyone in that, how does that feel? When we address each different person, so some of those people that are included, we talked about teamwork over the last couple of weeks in some way of being mindful. We include everyone even though they may not be our best friend. When somebody falls down and they're hurt, we ask them if they need help, and we help them anyway. And it's interesting because all you really have to do with the kids, and I guess it's probably the same for adults here, is how would you feel if you were left out? How would you feel if you fell down and because that person didn't like you, they just looked at you? What would be different if this person that I don't get along with well, what if I helped them up anyway? How would that change things? I'm going to take a moment here and put on a public service announcement. And when we come back, I want to just wrap up talking a little bit about ethics and once more about arguing to learn.
This is Healthcare 411, information for better health. About 17% of U.S. kids and teens are obese. ARC research shows weight management programs such as those offered by some schools or healthcare centers can help. But becoming healthier takes commitment. ARC director Dr. Carolyn Clancy explains.
There is no clear-cut solution that works for everyone, but it does help to have the whole family adopt healthy habits early to reduce the risks of any member becoming obese. All parents should continue to encourage their kids to adopt healthy habits, such as getting daily exercise and eating a healthy diet. Be a good example to them. It's one of the greatest preventive health gifts you can give to your family.
Order a free DVD from ARC, available online at ahrq.gov/child/dvdobesity.htm. Healthcare 411 is produced by ARC, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Deborah James for Healthcare 411.
So childhood obesity is becoming such an issue in the Western world. And part of that, I believe, is, again, not slowing down. obesity in general could be about not slowing down. We get so wrapped up in what it is that we're doing, and we stay in that fight or flight mode. So not only do we have now our hormones and our nervous system, or our endocrine system and our nervous system working against us, we also make poor decisions because we haven't stopped and thought about it. So we go back to go fast by going slow. If we take a moment and allow ourselves to see how we really feel. In fact, I read two books that I really, really love by Marcy Smiroff are Love for No Reason and Happy for No Reason. And in Happy for No Reason, I believe it was Happy for No Reason, she talked about taking a moment and asking your body before you eat the food, is this what you need? When you're really tuned in, so we're not just coming from the place of, oh my gosh, I'm famished and I've got to eat, because then you're having a blood sugar issue and your body would gladly have a Snickers bar or any sort of candy bar, anything sugary to just get, you know, sugar into your bloodstream. But coming from the place of not getting to the place where we're so famished that we need food immediately, but more we're in a place of we are now getting ready to nourish our bodies, ask your body, does this work for you? You will have a reaction, a gut reaction, literally and figuratively, that will help you decide whether that's something that will contribute to health and better well-being or not. Go ahead, give it a try. Okay, coming back to ethics. So one of the things that I discussed, and actually I discussed it with two or three people, I just think it was best said last night with my teacher, is hiding behind legality or hiding poor ethics behind legality. Goes back to that question of just because you can doesn't mean you should. So just because something is legal doesn't necessarily make it ethical. And we could live our lives this way. We could run our businesses this way. That would certainly contribute to the health of our society. And just in our day-to-day, you know, just because it's legal doesn't mean it's ethical. And what are your ethics? What do you want to live by? How do you want to be treated? You go back to that, what people call the golden rule, you know, treat others as you want to be treated. I think it's such a great way to live. It, you know, people talk about karma too. You know, what comes around goes around. That's their easy way of describing it. It's actually a little more in depth than that. But let's just talk about what comes around goes around. We won't call it karma. We'll just call it what comes around goes around, or doing to others or treating others the way you want to be treated. I think if you really sit in your heart center, you sit and relax, you will know whether or not you should be doing it. And sometimes we do it anyway. And that's where we say, I'm sorry. That's where I want to come back to. Earlier, before the PSA, I talked about what I talk about with my kids. And the kids, a lot of them say, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, you know, and they go on and on. And I just look them right in the eye. Listen, if you say I'm sorry, and then you do it again, your sorry doesn't mean anything to me. So what I'm saying is when we make decisions and we maybe made a poor decision, and it could have been because we were in fear, it could have been because we were rushed, it could have been a million things, and we say I'm sorry, then stop doing that behavior. Otherwise, the sorry doesn't mean anything. And the kids, especially, and I actually feel it too, and hopefully you do too, that hurts. Like, I want, when I say I'm sorry to someone, I want them to believe me. And the only way they can believe me is if my actions speak to that. So I stop doing the behavior that is hurtful. So the ability to do something is intelligence. Deciding whether you should is wisdom. Are you, and then are you operating from wisdom and intelligence, or are you operating from a place of just being clever? Not that there isn't a space for that, but knowing when that's appropriate and what is that contributing to? Is it contributing to the practice of peace, the practice of love, the practice of acceptance, if you can't go as far as peace and love in a moment with a certain person or with a certain situation? So these are the questions to be thinking about this week. So the homework this week, breathing, stop, breathe. If it's not nice, maybe you just keep your mouth shut. Sit with that. Now, again, yes, what you think also matters. Words can hurt. So what you're thinking might not be the nicest thing you've ever thought. Keeping your mouth shut keeps it from exploding, keeps it from becoming someone else's problem too. When you're thinking it, you can change that thought process. You can stop, oh, this is what I'm thinking. I'd like to change this thought process. And that might just be, I'm going to follow my breath. And your mind wanders to what you were thinking about, and you invite him or her back to, we're breathing. We're following the breath down to our sit bones, and we're following it back out. And for me, this is an elliptical movement. So it goes down the front of my spine, around the bottom of my tailbone, and out the backside of my spine. For you, it might be a straight line back and forth. But following the breath, I like the ellipse just because it's a little more circular, and life to me is circular motion. We are going around and around. Our Earth goes around and around, going around the sun. Realize that when you take a moment and take that deep breath, you can change everything. So, homework is to breathe, to stop, to shut up for a moment. Just be quiet. Even if that's uncomfortable. So notice that it's uncomfortable. Okay. Is this life or death? Usually it won't be. So it's not fight or flight. So okay. So let's calm down and make a decision on what should I do. Sometimes that's all it takes. Stop, be quiet, and it kind of solves itself. Other times we stop, we get quiet, we decide what we should do, and then we can become more creative in that. How can I be friendly? Practice amity. How can I practice without harm, ahimsa? So Maitri, ahimsa, and satya. Amity or friendliness, without harm, and truthfulness. Let's practice that over the next week. And please, I really would like your feedback on this. How is this working for you? How is it not working for you? Any other feedback? I appreciate you all for understanding that last week we had some technical difficulties. I'm looking into getting a different mic, so we should be set for next month when I have Salvatore on again, and I will be inviting some other folks, including martial artists, massage practitioners, doctors, acupuncturists. We're going to have a lot of different people on the show, and I want to make sure that that works. I appreciate you just moving along with us and realizing that this is new to me, so I'll figure this out as I go. I find it funny because I am probably one of the most difficult folks to teach when it comes to technology, and I'm now on the internet, on the radio. And so I have to say thank you once again, Sifu Restita De Jesus. She's like my lifeline that helps me deal with my own insecurities in this. So to end the show today, you're going to practice your breath. You're going to think about what should I do. How am I contributing? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? empathy, all of these things wrapped together in the breath. Before you act, stop. Go fast by going slow. And more than anything, practice love, practice happiness, smile.
Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth.
Because